Allen's is on her way, but we're gonna start with Allen. So I'll call this meeting to order. Invocation and pledge of allegiance.
Heavenly Father, as we gather today during this week of Independence Day and look ahead at our nation's 250th anniversary, we are reminded of the blessings of freedom and the responsibility that comes with it. We are grateful to those who have courageously served and sacrificed to protect the liberties we enjoy. Guide us with wisdom, integrity, and humility as we serve our students, our college, and our community. May our decisions reflect a commitment to opportunity, stewardship, and the greater good. We ask for your blessing on this meeting and on all those we serve. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Do we have public comments?
We do, sir. We have three public comments.
Three public comments, okay.
Thank you.
Please keep your comments to 3 minutes, please. And Jason Barr, please, start us off.
Hi, Jason. Please state your name and address.
Jason Barr, 1637 Inland Avenue, North Fork, Florida, 34381. Good morning to all. Thank you for allowing me to speak this morning. I'm speaking on support of, you know, additional raising compensation to our base salary.
Could you speak up just a little bit?
Oh, sorry.
Thank you.
I'm here to speak about support for, you know, additional compensation and raise for our base salary. I'm not going to go over statistics and numbers and stuff. I figured I'd just share my own personal perspective and personal experience. I've been with the college for 7 years now. I was with the college beginning as an adjunct for 4 years, and then here recently hired on as a full-time instructor at the Venice campus. I teach earth science, environmental, ocean, the soon-to-be geology, and soon-to-be meteorology. And I teach a blend of both face-to-face and online courses. I'm also the course coordinator for all these courses as well. And the reason why I'm bringing this to your attention is that I teach overloads every semester, 8, fall and spring, and a full in the summer as well. And the reason I bring that to your attention is because I'm the only full-time faculty member here at State College of Florida in my little division, if you will, of the Earth Sciences. I'm it. I'm the only person. And the number of adjuncts that I have to work with to teach any of my courses on one hand. And those adjuncts also have full-time positions, and they teach maybe one course, maybe two courses online primarily. Now, I say that because I teach overloads every semester because I love this college. I love my subject area. I love my people at Venice. I love everybody at State College of Florida, even in Bradenton. I mean, everybody's great. I don't come up to Bradenton very much, but when I do, it's a good time. And I've served on many committees as well as search committees for full-time faculty and as adjuncts as well. And a lot of them have failed. And the reason they failed is not because they're unqualified candidates, it's because of compensation. And while they're attractive to the college, what we stand for, our goals, they look elsewhere because it's not financially conducive. I don't mind teaching overloads. I love my courses. I don't want not to offer any overloads because these students that I teach and therefore my courses won't have the opportunity to take these non-major science courses for the degree plan. And they fill fast, ladies and gentlemen. The online's and the face-to-face, when the registration opens, 96 hours. Most of them will fill 96 hours after registration opens. That leaves a lot of students not being able to register for courses. I get emails all the time. 95
school. It's
maxed out, unless we can open more sections. And I don't want to not offer courses.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Colleen Page, faculty.
Hello, I'm Colleen Page, 6960 White Willow Court, Sarasota, 34243. Hi, I teach mass communication and public speaking at SCF. I started as an adjunct in 2016. I've been full-time for, this will be my fourth year coming up as a full-timer. SCF has received additional recurring state funding. Let's invest it wisely with your support of our higher experienced faculty. Let's all agree that we must thrive. Our students deserve it, our faculty deserves it, SCF at large deserves it. We must attract and retain highly experienced continuing contract faculty, like Jay, right, with competitive salaries. We need to stay competitive with other colleges. Our students deserve nothing less. And like Jay, I love my students. When we focus on quantity, we have more people but less impact. This results in higher turnover and inconsistent instruction, which lowers learning outcomes and increases cost to our institution over time. Most importantly, it's missed potential for our students. Building impact starts with a strong foundation. Building impact starts with a strong foundation. Qualified faculty meet accreditation standards and elevate SCF's quality. More graduates means greater impact. Students are more prepared to transfer their careers and lifelong success. This is something upon which we can all agree. We want faculty to stay, to build programs, and create a culture of excellence. I teach public speaking as well as mass communication. I work with students to build skills in my conversation salon group every single semester. I also work with students who have found the courage to actually enter public speaking competitions. Communication, the number one skill employers value. I am here at SCF sharing my commitment to my profession, to SCF, and I actively mentor students. In closing, committing our additional recurring state funding to our highly experienced continuing contract faculty is a bedrock investment that will pay dividends in the years to come. I thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm Catherine Bezura, and I am at 207 32nd Street West, Bradenton, Florida, 34205. I'm an art historian here at the State College of Florida, and I found my calling years ago. And I want to talk about, in Caravaggio's Calling of St. Matthew, a beam of light cuts through the darkness and lands on a man who does not yet know he is about to change his life. That's Matthew sitting at a table watching what is measurable, coins, numbers, certainty, and then he is seen, he is called, and everything shifts. What makes this captured moment extraordinary is not that just Christ points with the same hand as Adam on Michelangelo's Sistine ceiling, mimics it exactly, my hand is shaking a little, that's in the creation fresco, it's that we see Matthew rising the moment of his first action. That is where we are today. For too long, we have sat at our own table of numbers, budgets, line items, constraints, convincing ourselves that compensation for educators is a fixed reality, something we inherit, not something we transform. But like Matthew, we are being called to see differently. Faculty are not just expenses on a spreadsheet. They are the very light that animates this institution. They carry knowledge into classrooms, mentor students through uncertainty, and build the intellectual and creative life of this college. And yet we ask them year after year, crisis after crisis, to do more, to give more, while receiving less in real terms. The question before us is not whether we can afford to change. It's whether we are willing to stand up when the moment demands it. Caravaggio paints hesitation. He is a murderous roustabout. But he paints hesitation into this beautiful religious painting. Who, me? He seems to ask. That hesitation is human. But the power of the painting lies in what comes next, the choice to become something different, to rise. Today, you have that same choice, to move from tradition to transformation, from maintaining a system to seeing it forward, from seeing faculty as a cost to recognizing them as the core investment in our future. A meaningful raise is not just a financial decision. It is a declaration of values. It says we see you. We respect you. We are willing to evolve. The light is already in this room on your faces. I've seen it since the minute I walked in. The question is, will we remain seated or will we rise? Thank you.
Thank you. I assure all three of you that this board hears you loud and clear and works diligently towards the same goal that you have. President Gregory?
Thank you, Chairman. Yeah, I'll follow up on that as well. I think everybody, all the board members have been on the board long enough to know that we recognize this issue, and each of the three faculty members that spoke, and any employee that would come forward, would say, I think, similar things, and they would all be correct. The fundamental line that I like to use to explain it to people that aren't sitting around this room and maybe don't get it is, I tell them that our employees, including our faculty, received a 15% raise in total over the last 15 years. It is not a sustainable way to pay your workforce or retain talent or recruit new talent. And it is absolutely true that it's a difficulty for us, and it has resulted in failed searches repeatedly over the last year. So we know that we're in trouble. If we had additional dollars, we would put them here. Last year, as a reminder, our budget was really close to negative $6 million. So add up all the state money coming in and all the tuition and fees, and we spent about $6 million more than that. That's possible because we have a checking account, sort of, if you want to call it that, some carry forward dollars. And we could do that for about 3 years, and then we'd be bankrupt. So that's not an option for us. We do have some great news. I don't want to steal too much of Jennifer's thunder, but, you know, we did receive additional state dollars this year, $2.5 million, roughly, additional recurring dollars. And with those dollars combined with all the cuts that we've been making, including layoff of personnel over this last year, we're going to have a level budget this year. I'm very excited about the work that Jennifer and her team have done. And we also found a way, and you approved it last year, spending again some of those carry forward rainy day dollars to offer a 7% one-time wage action. It's not recurring. It's not the ideal. It's not, you know, you can't count on it as an annual salary, but we found a way to do it, and you approved it. That's still pending approval from the union. They haven't had an opportunity to get together and vote on it yet. So that is out there for all other employees. They will receive that in July, and as soon as the union approves it, they will receive it as well. So we're going to continue to be creative in our budget and look for ways to do wage actions like that. And then we will all collectively do what we have to do, working with the state legislature, to close the gap. And remember, the gap between us and Polk State and Pasco, Hernando, and Pensacola, and our similarly sized schools that have been able to afford to give wage increases, each of those colleges receive at least $15 million a year more than we do and have the exact same number of students. So we are focused our energy there appropriately. A few other things to highlight before we jump into the agenda, Chairman. First is great news. Dr. Hill, Jamie Tracy, Dr. Rand, and it could go around the room and around the college. And so many people worked so hard. Remember, about 18 months ago, we had an accreditation visit off-site and then on-site with SAC COC, the accrediting body. They started off with 33 things. They call them findings, but preliminary findings. 33, whittled it down to 3 pretty quickly. Anyway, we finally got our accreditation last week, so we're good for another 10 years. And now Florida law, by the way, requires us to go out and seek a different accreditor anyway. So we could wait 10 years, but but now we can. So we do have our accreditation. That's big news. That's a great job, Dr. Hill. You and your team, really outstanding.
Great job. Thank you.
We also, on very short notice, post security notice, it's for security reasons, it's always short notice. Our team had about 48 hours notice to host the governor. Several of you were here for that, and I appreciate that. I couldn't be here. I was out of the country. I didn't have more than 48 hours notice either. But the governor understands. That's how it works. And he was thrilled with this visit. We got glowing feedback from him and his team. Our team also responded. You may have seen it in the news, a fire on the Venice campus. We had a lightning strike. How many days did that fire burn?
It's still be smoldering a little bit right now.
Directly behind, by the way, our collegiate school. And so some scary moments while we waited to find out. But anyway, no damage other than to vegetation and trees. I will say this, you know, sort of going back to looking for things that we can do. This is very tentative and preliminary, but I will say that there is a possibility for us to receive a lump sum, significant chunk of money later this year, selling an asset that the college owns that we don't use and don't need and aren't going to need in the future. And can I say what it is, Steve, or should I wait?
You can say what it is.
Yeah, I can say what it is. So, in the 1960s, I think the federal government gave educational institutions broadcast licenses for certain frequencies. So we have two of them, like many other colleges do. And you could only use them to sort of direct over the air, give educational information, right? Like public broadcasting system type of thing. We don't do that. That's not how the technology works. You don't do that through online classes. In 2010, the federal government said, okay, it's not really being used. You can lease it out. I think that was in 2005, actually. Anyway, so we started leasing it out. We've been leasing out those two licenses that we own, and we've had a buyer contact us, and we've been negotiating for about a year, trying to get a good lump sum fair market value price for those. So Steve and Jennifer and others have been working very diligently on that. And I hope that in the coming months, in the next 2 or 3 months, we're going to come back and say we got a good chunk of money. It's not recurring dollars. It's one time. Once we sell it, right, it's gone. And then we can talk about what we're going to do as a college with those funds. So one other possibility besides going back and doing what we know, again, what we have to do, and that is advocate to the legislature that we need more dollars. But I don't want to forget to say thank you for this year. Senator Boyd, especially, and the entire delegation, to get $2.5 million is a huge victory, and much more than the rest of the college system got, especially the colleges that are about the same size as us. You know, I know you don't feel too bad because they get so much more, but we're closer to the 500K range compared to our 2.5 million. And I think that's it.
That's enough. Let me also say something, and I'm very proud of this board for doing so. Last year we gave a one-time amount of money to the faculty because this board understands what they're going through, has a heart for that. In order to do that last year, you may remember we had to postpone buying $1.6 million worth of computer assets that the college desperately needed. We didn't do that so we could give it to them. That need's still there, but that's how this board understands the subject, and we're working on it. President Gregory and myself have made it very clear to Jim, to Senator Boyd, our need for operational money. They can give us all the money we want for big buildings. They have made us find the money to run those buildings. And as Jennifer will be talking about a little bit later, you're going to see what it's like in the real world when we're talking about operational numbers. I don't want to steal the thunder either. So let's move on.
Can I make a comment? So I was at the money that they've been increasing through this paid. And I would say, going back to the system problem, is we're basically a public school. And we're basically under many of the same constraints that public school systems have. And until that system is recognized in Tallahassee, we're going to continue to have this challenge. Other than the fact that we're $12.5 million behind peer schools, the problem is that we haven't been able to have any other resources available to compensate our staff. And if they're going to continue to do that, then they have to, Tallahassee has to look at that separately, just as they look at teachers. So that's my only comment on that.
Thank you, Daniel. We concur. Our mission moment. Carrie Condor and Dawn Hale. Training our faculty. This is good.
So coming on the cusp of our wonderful faculty that have spoken today, I want to thank you for allowing us to be here to represent the Center for Teaching and Learning Excellence and Online Learning. And thank you, President Gregory, the board, and all the cabinet members. So we're going to talk about just briefly. I've been told I have a very short amount of time. So I'll try to keep it as quick as possible to talk about all the wonderful things that our faculty do through our Center for Teaching and Learning and how we support them through that. So our Center for Teaching and Learning Excellence, we're inspiring growth, fostering innovation, and really just talking about faculty excellence. So preparing our faculty to walk into our classrooms and have that impact that they already spoke about with their students every day. So who we are, we're a very small but mighty team right now. So we do have Dawn Hale, who is our CTLE coordinator. And Dawn really talks about faculty development. She hosts our professional development. She's the jack of all trades. We have Natalia Gerasimova, who is our technical coordinator. She is our LMS administrator. So that's our learning management system, Canvas, and she is the technical brains behind Canvas. So our faculty know her as the system, and she does a wonderful job in that. And like I said, what we're about is really about faculty development, making sure that our faculty are prepared with our students, and really just coming alongside them and supporting them any way that we can. We empower professional growth, we have a commitment to innovation, and we're always centered on student success. So, as I mentioned, I have a very short amount of time, so I'm just going to share with you a couple of brief things that we do, some of the things that we've done in the past, some of our current initiatives, and some of the things that we're hoping to do in the future. So, I mentioned faculty development and mentoring. So, one of the things that we are currently working on, especially over the summer, as we're going to welcome our new faculty back in the fall, is our faculty development and mentoring. So creating a faculty onboarding experience that really comes around and supports the faculty from the moment that they come as new faculty all throughout their cycle as faculty here. Course quality and design. One of the things that I think is biggest in this area, and it's really a testament to the wonderful work that our faculty do, is just recently in the spring, we brought on new software in February. And in 2 months' time, we trained over 250 faculty to improve the digital accessibility of all of their courses in Canvas. And our faculty showed up, which I think is a true testament to them. This improvement in digital accessibility was creating spaces in our online environment that really support student learning and help make sure that all students can succeed in our courses. Online learning engagement, this is an area that we'll be focusing on in the coming year, really with the rollout of our strategic plan and our values of belonging and community. We'll be focusing on increasing that engagement in our online courses for our faculty and equipping them with the skills and the evidence-based practices to really increase that engagement and create that sense of community in online classes. Organically in face-to-face classes, it's much easier to do. So we have a lot of intentionality in the online learning to help equip our faculty with so that they can reach those students. And lastly, innovation and continuous improvement. What I would like to share with you is a future project that in November we will be hosting our annual Faculty Professional Development Day. So this is a day dedicated to faculty professional development. All of our faculty come, we invite all of our part-time faculty as well to enjoy a day that's all about learning. So this is good teaching. teaching practices. How do we make sure that when we get our students in the room, that we know what they're learning, we know that they have learned, and what we can do to engage them in that process. This year, our Faculty Professional Development Day will really be focused on a workshop mentality so that faculty can take away with them something tangible that they can implement right away with their students.
Carly?
Yep.
Can you provide more detail and background information on the accessibility project and how much?
Absolutely.
Like the number of documents.
How much time
do I have? Yeah, the timeline, both for the two of you and for all of our faculty, what they've had to do this last year, and I know it continues for one more year, right?
Yes, it does. So the digital accessibility movement was really through a push through the Department of Justice. So all of our digital content, and this is well beyond online learning, so I would be remiss to not shout out student services, our IT team. This was really a team effort throughout the college. But the time that we spent was most closely with faculty, and it was helping. We brought on a piece of software that helps them evaluate and improve their digital content. So it's not just online learning, it's actually anything that's in our learning management system. So things like alt text for images, closed captioning are the ones that most people are familiar with. But this is actually meeting a higher level of standard. These are the web content accessibility standards. There's 2.1 version, and we're not just shooting for the single A, we're shooting for the double A to make sure that all of our content is really accessible for all of the students. To speak to President Gregory's point, there was hundreds of hours put into the initiative. Like I mentioned that we trained over 250 faculty in over 30 training sessions, some of them on a Saturday morning and some of them on a Wednesday evening, just so that we could meet the needs of all of our faculty. And our faculty, again, a true testament to their motivation to student success, we improved tens of thousands of documents. PDF documents, Word documents, videos, all kinds of wonderful content that all of our faculty have spent years putting into their courses. We work to improve those things to make those spaces better for students.
In a short 2 month period.
In a short 2 month period. So what is it that we do? Again, we are supporting faculty, but how does that impact our students? So our faculty support creates clear and engaging courses, right? That is our mission, is to make sure that our faculty are equipped with those skills when they show up in front of our students, that they are supported, that they have the skills needed to meet the ever-evolving needs of our students. And that has a direct correlation to student success. So we know that, especially with our current initiatives in online learning, building community and belonging in our online learning courses directly relates to student persistence, to their retention, and to their success. So really coming alongside faculty to do that. And as I mentioned, building towards the future, we are a small but mighty team. We are hoping to bring on two more staff members to really establish the Center for Teaching and Learning to be a model of teaching and learning across our region and the Florida College system. That's in a short amount of time. Did I do good? On time. So again, thank you for being here. Sean and I love what we do in the Center for Teaching and Learning because we have amazing faculty, many of which are sitting today with us. And we're just here to support them.
Questions? The board?
Absolutely.
I wrote like four or five down. Hopefully they're quick. But I love that we have this. I am a huge fan of development. When you're green, you grow. When you're ripe, you rot. And I don't want any of our faculty not growing. I'm curious if you could educate me a little bit in for teacher licenses and faculty licenses, is there like continuing ed that is required?
So, and I think some of our administrators in the academic realm could speak to that a little bit better, but yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So this would qualify.
Well, it's a little bit different than it is in K-12. First of all, I want to say that these ladies are entirely too humble, and they just barely scratch the surface of everything they do. And this department, I would consider to be critical infrastructure for academic affairs. So when we hire faculty, we hire them based on their subject matter expertise. So they're an expert in earth science, for example. then most of our faculty do not specifically have expertise in education except for our education faculty. And so faculty come to us knowing all kinds of detailed things about their subject, but they may not know all the different ways that you can deliver content. They may not have a background in andragogy or pedagogy. Pedagogy is children, andragogy is adults. And so these folks are bridging that gap, and they're taking our experts and they're turning them into expert teachers. And so in higher education, no, there is not a teacher certification type thing. Institutionally, we can, and most institutions do have some sort of requirements for professional development internally, but as far as the state is concerned, there's nothing.
Yeah, I'm curious on that. And then do we train faculty and teachers outside of State College of Florida in a way that maybe that could be a revenue generator?
Not yet.
You're small but mighty team.
Yes. I think that is part of, you know, as I mentioned, that our future really is to become this model center for teaching and learning. And I think one of the biggest things is creating those collaborations and those partnerships with our other institutions. So sky's the limit on what's to come.
Okay, sorry, I have more questions.
Yeah.
One, so with Canvas, you mentioned Canvas. I know Canvas had a security breach. Is there security training within our development training?
Yes, so we have
so
our IT.
We're not the one doing the breach.
Yes. We have our IT security training, which is a comprehensive training of all security. That would also include those things that are within the LMS.
Okay. And have you thought about taking on an internship as well for your small but mighty team in a cost-effective way?
I think what we're leaning more towards is leaning on some of the expertise of our faculty. Really just that train-the-trainer type model. So the faculty that are doing an amazing job, making sure that they're empowered to train the other faculty. So I would like to really start to boost some of our champions in our faculty to kind of take on some of that training aspect.
I was just thinking, because it'd be a great opportunity to do it cost-effectively, but also give professional development for potential leaders, and then also provide maybe a younger perspective in how to design things.
And connect with students,
exactly.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Just that's a great idea.
Just a thought.
Mm-hmm. Thank you.
Other questions?
You guys are all.
Thank you very much, Ray.
Thank
wonderful
you.
Work you do. We
thank
appreciate
you.
It so much.
Again, thank
thank
you.
You
for having me.
Vice President Price, CFO's report, please.
I would probably be best to table any talk here for the budget discussion that's coming up, but if there are any questions about the April statements that were in the books.
As usual, your narrative was outstanding and answered about every question a man could ask.
That's the goal. That's the goal.
Yes.
Okay.
President?
Oh, okay. So one question. Would you mind reminding me what Title III and Perkins Amendment Number 2 are?
So Perkins grants focus on career and technical education programs and workforce development. Title III grants and monies strengthen the institution. So they build the institution to support capacity to carry out various programs. So there are two different focuses of grants. And in the budget amendments that you see each month in these reports, that's just our folks reallocating or spending those grant monies, transferring them out of where they came into and putting them into the proper expense category. But we have to do that through budget amendments because of the way the funds come in to the institution.
And these are federal grants?
Title III is a federal grant.
Perkins
is federal
pass-through
to state.
Passes through the state. We had to apply specifically to get the Title III grant and be awarded that. And it supports more broadly our strategic plan and our guided pathways initiatives, whereas our Perkins grant is specific to our workforce education programs. And that money, we have to demonstrate certain need criteria for those programs each year, and that's awarded proportionally from the state according to a formula. So that grant comes every year, and we just have to reapply and demonstrate our need. Whereas the Title III was awarded as a
5-year grant that we had to apply for specifically with a specific project that we wrote out that we wanted to accomplish, which was about the Congress.
Any other questions on the current report? Not the budget. Okay. Let's move on then to the approval of the non-consent agenda items. Are there any exhibits that anyone wants to pull out?
Can we talk about the evidence-based reading plan?
Okay.
Sorry, G.
G, you want to take that out? Any other exhibits? Hearing none, the chair will entertain a motion to adopt all but G.
So moved.
Motion?
Second.
Second, McCarron. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Let's talk about G. Go ahead, Karen.
Literacy coaches have been kind of up in the school system conversation because that seems to be where we spent a lot of our, at least in Sarasota County, our dollars from the old COVID that are kind of going away. So that was one something that was kind of cut or reduced. So I noticed that we do have literacy coaches and we don't follow the Just Read Florida model, which is, you know, I'm sort of the experts on that. What is our average class size in our collegiate school, especially in ELA? Okay, so like a decent, we're not overcrowded or anything like that. So if we're not doing literacy coaches, or are we reducing any of our literacy coaches down?
So we've never really had a literacy coach.
Okay,
we've
so she's following the pattern.
They're certified with multiple credentials. So each one is getting reading enrichment, but it's 300 hours of reading to make sure that they've got, they have to have English as a second language, and those have some certification on their microcredential literacy.
Okay. I mean, obviously it's working because we have great test scores and everything.
Yeah, and so when we say we don't follow, we don't follow the rules to say that.
Right. Okay, I was just curious.
Yes, ma'am. Sorry.
I have a question for Kelly as well. So I noticed that we have to plan in the event that we have students that are not on level for reading, right? So we project how many, what percentage that is or whatever. Being that we don't have a designated literacy coach, we use other professionals who have credentialing for literacy. Do they have enough time reasonably in their schedule should we have more students that fall off that ledge and need more reading support? Because in other words, like, are they already expending most of their time towards ESE students or ESL students or whatever? Like, do they have capacity to serve the students in specifically reading?
We are also a small community and we do a lot of scheduling that is variable depending on who the students are. So with middle school especially, I think that's where we see most of the attention going. And there's four paraprofessionals that are there that do small class sessions that do one-to-one. We're also working with our resident health graders to come in and come back to our school to help with some reading and that way. So it's really about scheduling. Dennis has worked specifically with teachers who are ESL graders and who are involved in reading, and with the counselor as well as the kind of literacy goal. So we have a lot of meetings called RTI meetings as well as staff meetings. We do those every 2 weeks. They identify all the students who are under, and then we monitor them throughout the day.
So if we had to defend the reason why we don't have a literacy coach per se, we would say that these four employees have X percent of their time that is dedicated towards literacy intervention.
We're all literacy coaches.
Okay.
Yeah, there's not one specific person. It has to be all of us.
Yeah. Any other questions on this exhibit? Hearing none, I'll take accept a motion to adopt Exhibit 8.
G.
G, sorry.
So moved.
Second.
If further discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign, motion carries. Approval of the financial consent agenda. Are there any exhibits they'd like to be taken out?
Oh,
it is. Any others?
I'd also like to say for N, I believe we need the board approval on that contract.
I'm sorry?
Exhibit N?
Yeah.
We need the board approval on that next contract.
This one, I understand. You want to discuss this out by itself then? Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
Okay. We'll take exhibit N and O out. Is there a motion to adopt J, K, L, and M?
So moved.
There's a motion, there's a second. Further discussion, hearing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Now, let's talk about O first, go ahead.
Personalized education program, I am a dummy when it comes to that, so as I'm reading it, is that, sorry if this is a dumb question, but is that so we can affect, accept vouchers for personal? The voucher program?
I don't know.
Okay. Okay, and, I think that's cool. Just curious, I wanted to make sure I understood it.
Okay.
Yep.
All right, let's talk about N, and you have given here a document, who's handling this? Christie handles, Jeff, you handling this?
Just to bring to your attention, we're requesting approval to enter into contract with Allied Barton Security Services as a result of our ITN to negotiate for security services for Brady's and Venice and Lakewood Ranch campuses. It was a competitive evaluation and negotiation process. So as a result of that, we are recommending you approve Allied.
Explain this security to me. This is in addition to our own staff?
This provides supplemental security services.
What do they do specifically, like the nighttime shifts?
They all facets of public safety.
They augment our internal staff for decades. So they have a presence on all three campuses. Brady's been 365, 24/7. Lakewood Ranch is a limited schedule. Venice, around the clock there. They augment our staff. It's a Class D unarmed, and Allied is the incumbent, and are absolutely high performers. So we're thrilled that they're being recommended for it.
Question, is this part of the funding, that the additional funding that the governor?
No, this is not
part of that.
It's our base operating.
Yeah, every year.
Okay.
Our personal dollars.
So remind me about what the governor, you know what I'm talking about, the expansion of the, that was armed, I think.
Right, the legislation passed this year, the governor signed, essentially extends the Guardian program that's implemented K-12 in Florida, extended it to higher education. So if we had additional dollars, we could hire armed guardians in the same way that they can and do it K-12.
So they approved it, but they didn't give me funding.
That's correct.
What's the point of that?
It's me.
Well, they have to approve it to allow it, so that the local colleges could if they chose to.
Yeah.
If they gave us the $15 million we deserve, we could probably do that, but we don't.
I don't understand politics.
Okay. I'm going to handle N by itself. Then. Let's have a motion to accept or not accept this document.
I have one question.
Go right ahead.
I have a lot of questions.
Please.
I'm just looking at the calculation of hours, and being that Parrish will be completed before the end of the fiscal year, do we need to allot any hours on here for serving on the Parrish campus?
It's the timing of when we bring the building online and when they need to have a presence, and we'll just get hourly rates for base security supervision. We'll just negotiate that at that time.
But I mean, everything is going perfect, which doesn't happen often in the construction industry. It'll be coming online very close to the end of next year, very close, if everything goes right.
That means it's
So I think cherish, yeah. Brace yourselves for next year.
Don't jinx us.
Any other discussion on this? Open the discussion. Go ahead.
Healthcare reform legislation costs, are they passing through their healthcare costs to us? And C5?
That I can't answer.
I'd like an answer to that. I mean, I'll trust you. I imagine it was in the agreement before as well, healthcare reform was in 2012, but that's an interesting thought considering they have our own healthcare costs to worry about. And then my other thought is their liability for auto is $1 million. Do we foresee, I think there's a couple of bills, I think Representative McFarland has a bill or had a bill that was to increase the liability threshold for public. Is that, is $1 million enough? Because I'm starting to see a lot of the limits increased on public.
It would be enough under the new bill.
For now. Oh, under the new bill? Okay, all right. Yeah, so I'm fine with the contract. I'm just curious about the healthcare reform legislation cost. I think that was an interesting little tidbit.
Anything else? Chair entertain a motion to accept this contractual agreement or not.
Move approval.
Move for approval.
Second.
Lon, second. Any further discussion on the motion? Hearing no, I'll call for a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Thank you. Exhibit O. Any other further questions on Exhibit O? If not, Chair, accept the motion to adopt.
Second.
Motion made and second. Any further discussion? Hearing none, we'll call a vote. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. And the real reason why we're all here, operational budget. And we got 20. Yeah, never mind. Go.
I can do it quick.
Don't do it quick. This is important stuff. We'll stay as late as it takes.
No. Hopefully, with the release of information ahead of time, you all have had a chance to kind of dig into the details. My objective was to try to think through some of the questions I would have in the budget year and address those through the narratives and the footnotes in there. My plan for today was just kind of taking you through the shift and the change and how we went through the budget exercise this year, the goals that we tried to accomplish, walk you through each one of those operating budgets. If you have any questions, please feel free to ask them. And then we'll kind of go from there. The budget this year is a shift in methodology for the college. Traditionally, I think it was a budget-to-budget look at spending authority based on prior assumptions. I think you all know last year the budget was almost a $6 million deficit. So that was kind of my first task coming in here as I sat through this meeting last year before I had even started was we need to get back to zero, at least a balanced budget. And what do we need to do that? So along with all of the staff of the college and the finance team who put in many hours of work, we went through the exercise of looking at our actual spending patterns, taking a look at how funds were being classified, cleaning some things up. And I so appreciate all the work the college did to really take an honest look at what expenses we need to have, we have to have, what we don't have to have, being a little scared to give up some of their budgets that they've had roll forward year to year, and kind of trust in the process that we need to get to a zero-based budgeting framework, if you will, if we want to get ourselves into a better situation to be able to allocate new monies to salaries. That is my number one goal, is to right the ship so that when we're allocating all of our reoccurring dollars to reoccurring expenses, anything new can be allocated to salaries first. Right now we're filling the gap. We're plugging the hole to get to zero. So if we can kind of stick through these guardrails this next year, we're getting there.
we're getting to that place where we can show the legislature and we can have that conversation that, look, we're stewarding the monies that you're giving us the best we can. There's no excess spend. There's nothing. Here's the story I want to tell, and here's why we deserve those new dollars. So hopefully this is going to give the college that narrative and that document to take with you to have those conversations. And again, a budget is a guardrail. It allows all of us to operate in that year with those limits in mind. We also made a concerted effort to take where we could find some funds that hadn't been spent in certain categories. We allocated all of that to contingency this year. That puts those spending decisions back with leadership and the cabinet, so that when we are moving through the year and there is an expense that you don't have the budget for in your particular department, but it's critical to mission, we can take that to leadership in the cabinet, justify why you need it, how is this satisfying our mission, and we can fund that expense. So that when we go to build our budget in the next year, we're going to take a look at actual spend again, and your money will be there. We'll know how much you need to make your department work like you need it to work. So it's no small task. I think there was a lot of angst, I know, especially from me, going through this. We did put some key strategies in place, though, heading into this. So number one, we established our budget baseline using estimated operating activity. We looked at 25 and we projected through to 26 to get a real feel of what those actual expenses were. We've anticipated enrollment growth consistent with our institutional planning assumptions. I don't think it's overreaching. I think it's a doable goal. I think it's conservative, but I do think we're gonna see some growth next year in enrollment. We are not funding any new positions currently. We're keeping those vacant positions we're still searching for. We have done some work, though, to prioritize vacancies, and our prioritized vacancies are faculty. We need to get those positions filled. We're deferring minor equipment purchases. That's something you'll see in the numbers. Any minor equipment that flows through our operating budget, we've deferred for next year. That's a zero. As we move through the year, if we need a particular piece of equipment, though, we do have contingency. That request can come forward. We can meet that need and buy that piece of equipment. We're just not going to budget for it up front. And then finally, we're limiting additions of anything recurring. We're really going to take a look at if it's a new expense category. We're really going to take a hard look at that and see if that's something that we can do without or fund a different way before we put dollars to that in the current year. So going through all of these exercises and estimating all of our revenues and taking a hard look at expenses, we have a balanced budget for 27, which, again, was no small task here. You can see on page 123, our 26-27, the strategic budget goals for Higher and Faster. Here are the six things we were trying to accomplish with this budget. Fiscal balance and stability, number one. Increase in our enrollment, that's our revenue growth. Improve our retention and persistence, that's really a cost efficiency for us. Accelerate the time to graduation, which is a productivity goal. We need to strengthen our workforce alignment, which is growth and relevance of our programs. And then enhance student engagement and belonging, which contributes to that retention goal. Those were in our heads. If you turn the page to 124 and 125, here's the pie charts that you can see. Here's all of our operating revenues broken down in terms of how they're allocated. You can see our largest amount of funding comes from our recurring appropriations. Tuition and fees is second, and all other is third. In our operating expenses, 73% of our operating expenses are spent on salary and benefits. With the rest being allocated, as you can see, down the page. But they do; those numbers do balance. So it's a zero budget. I wanted to kind of lay out for you on 126 a comparison between our appropriations last budget year and this budget year. In the total recurring, you can see the $2.5 million increase between 26 and 27. Breaking it down then through non-recurring portions, the CDL Fleet Force took a $500,000 hit in appropriations this year, but we're the agency for them. That's not a program of the college. We steward those funds for them. They do rent our parking lots and they do have some office space here, but by and large, that is a separate program from the college. And then finally, our PICO funding. Last year we received $12.5 million for our projects. This year we received $7.5 million, allocated towards the parish collegiate school. And $127 million, you get into the meat of it. So here is our largest, it's the lower division, so here is the operating budget. One thing I do want to point out, when we prepared this analysis for you, I think you're used to seeing budget to budget. What did we do with this year's budget that's different from last year's budget? Because this was a rebuilding year and because we're working from actual, I think it's more meaningful for you to compare our proposed budget to where we think we're going to end, our estimated actual. Mm-hmm. We still have the original budget on there. You can see the big differences, though, if you look at budget to budget, which I think was some of the fear and panic when I started talking about cutting budgets by 5%. Yes, we have budget changes, but we're giving folks what they actually spent. So, again, I think as we look through how we ended up in our proposed budget for 26-27, it's just more meaningful for you, and I explained it in the footnotes, but to take a look at where we think we're actually going to end for 26.
Mr. Chairman, next question. Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Or maybe make a comment. I'm thrilled to see it this way. Not being an accountant or numbers guy, I never understood why we did it the other way. Feels like the actual or estimated actual because of the time frame things. Makes so much more sense than proposed from 12, 14 months ago to now proposed, when the proposed and the actual are wildly different things, and they are every year. Mm-hmm. So I'm really happy to see this. I couldn't get a good enough explanation to say, I think we should change it because it's not really an area of expertise, but having seen this and what you talked about before with it, I just want to really encourage that I'm really happy with us doing it this way.
Thanks. I'm glad to hear that. I do want to say how it has been done at State College of Florida in prior years was not incorrect. It's a different budget methodology, that's all. And when your goals or assumptions aren't significantly changing from year to year, it's okay to do things that way. It's okay to compare budget to budget. So I'm not here to say that this was inherently wrong in prior years. We're just changing this year. I think institutionally, since COVID on, I think this institution, our goals have changed now. You know, we're becoming leaner. Things have changed politically. You know, our focus has to change a little bit. So we have to kind of abandon prior assumptions and just start from scratch and build up to where we need to be. And the marker for that is going to be, what are we actually spending right now? Mm-hmm. And go from there.
Yeah, it's a difference of, it was presented much in a fund accounting approach prior. And this
right.
is much more balance sheet, not, you know, more for-profit look to it, if you will.
Right.
It's still in the fund accounting terms, but.
Yes, and I think you notice I took off, if you look at prior year's presentations, they would present unrestricted and restricted
right.
together. I felt that was confusing.
It was.
We still present restricted to you because budget funds do come in to our restricted accounts, but straight operating, here's what we've got. When the college is running, here's what we're running off of, without, you know, any grants involved or program restrictions or things like that. So hopefully, again, there's not as many details in a budget as there is in a financial statement. So we just tried to explain, you know, the significant variances between our proposed budget and our estimated actual. You know, our increases are based on enrollment growth. We received $2.5 million more in appropriations. I would point out to everybody, prior year's budgets, some funds were classified in incorrect lines. So we've gone through and just cleaned up where certain funds should be budgeted and reflected. It doesn't represent a loss of funding, so I don't want you to think that we've lost anything. It's just being presented on a different, in a different fund.
Explain that to me for this line two, then. Support from local government, estimated budget 1.7, and got zero.
Right.
What happened here?
So those were, that's a reclassification of dual enrollment from...
So you moved the money somewhere else?
It that actually goes up into student fees. That goes up into student fees. What I want to say is in prior years, Fleet Force was budgeted into our operating accounts, into Fund 1, and it comes through with all of our appropriations, so I can understand why that may have been done, but those are agency funds from us. Those need to flow out through a different fund, so you're not going to see them here. They're not our operating dollars to spend. That's all. The other change that you'll see, if you notice, sales and services. The original budget in 25-26 was $681,000. You'll see our proposed budget is $155,000, with our estimated actual at only $30,000 this year. That is switching our property rentals. Property rentals need to flow through our Fund 3, which is our auxiliary. Those are not operating funds in the sense that they're not education-based. Those come from an outside auxiliary activity. Okay, so we haven't lost them. They just don't belong here in sales and services. They belong in the auxiliary funds. But when we transfer those funds back to use them, I know it can seem confusing, but it explains that non-revenue receipt line, which is the last line in total revenues. You see that's at $436,197. That's your auxiliary, that's your rentals coming back to support operations. That's how we transfer those monies back in. So we haven't lost any money. It's just flowing through now on the correct lines.
Gotcha.
I got a question on that.
Go ahead.
What's the basis that's going to increase so much from 279 to 436 original budget online?
Well, the non-revenue receipts, those were other things besides the rentals.
Okay.
Okay.
So there's other things in there.
There's other things in there. There's other things that flow back through.
So if I look at the first two line items, student fees and support from local government, and combine them, it's $500,000 lower. Is that the $500,000 from the trucking revenue that went down from 3.5 million?
It's just the way the budgets were done. Those are just budgeted numbers and assumptions. If you look at the estimated actual, just take a look at the estimated actual, because they're not included in there. That was just a correction of a prior year budget.
Okay.
Okay. And I think you all have seen that through this last year in the financial statements when we've had to correct certain line items. The corrections are just finalizing now through the budget worksheets. So you're not going to see that anymore as we move forward. You won't see any of those weird transfers or corrections or things like that. Everything should be in the right pew. If there's any other questions on expenditures or assumptions that we made, please let me know.
One last question. On salaries, note 4, net decrease due to vacancy adjustments and eliminated departments. I understand eliminate departments, but vacancy adjustments, what does that mean exactly?
There's going to be some positions that are vacant that we haven't filled yet that we're going to hold vacant in the next year. Those would probably
be...
We're not recruiting. We're going to hold those vacant for the next year. I will say those are administrative positions. Those are not faculty positions. And I also would point out personnel benefits, the big jump. We are now 100% budgeted for the actual expense of the change to and the increase with going to the state plans. Nothing is in contingency for that. This is your estimated expense. So we're all in now on that expense line with what we expect to spend.
Regarding that line, so why is it significantly more than what we're actually spending this year?
Because we are now fully reconciled to the state FRS, the insurance plans, the post-employment benefits, our health insurance premiums, and other benefit costs.
So was it a different, was that like a lump sum we had to add in last year?
Because we hadn't gone through a full year of being on the state insurance plan, we didn't even receive a full year's reporting from the state. We're actually reconciling to their accounts. So these are the amounts that we're expecting to have to pay out or fund in that next year, fully aligned with the state plan now. And there's no more guessing. Everybody's got that experience rate. So
that's a third of our 2.5 million. Right there.
Right.
I mean, a little frustrating.
It's a lot frustrating. So they did have some increases to health insurance premiums for the employer side. They did not raise premiums for the employees this year with the budget. Any other questions? The second page is just the breakout for the upper division, and if you add those two together, it equals your pie chart. So, if you would please go to page 129. Here's your restricted funds overview that I wanted to talk to you about. So these are funds that are restricted, you know, due to the nature of the funds or what they're coming from. Student fees. That's your financial aid fees and your student activity fees. That's SABR. Those are restricted funds. We can only spend them on certain things. We can't use them in operations. The support from the state government. Here's where you're seeing the CDL, the fleet force. Here's where you're seeing line, crop, our workforce grants, open door. here's where you see that big difference. The CDL should have been budgeted in this line last year. Here's where it belongs. So we're not losing or gaining any funding. It's just a reclassification of where you're seeing it.
Yes.
Support from the federal government, that's the Perkins, the TRIO, the Title III grant, the work study grants.
How confident are we going to do we think? Because it's coming through the Department of Education or HHS?
These are coming. If they're in here, we're confident that we're receiving these funds in the next year. We've already received notification of those amounts. I wouldn't put something in a budget that I didn't know. I wouldn't let the president talk about our sale of licenses with money until we get it in the door. So, gifts and grants, that's mostly representing the foundation funding for LINE and Pathway Navigators will receive their match for those grants this way. Other is other, that's interest income, and then our non-revenue receipts is pretty much just those transfers in from different funds. But I think it's easier to get an understanding of your restricted monies if you see them separately, broken out from your operating monies. $130, those are our collegiate school budgets that Kelly and her team prepares for us. Both of them, I would tell you, are surplus budgets for next year. No hugely significant changes in there that I think need to be addressed. And then finally, on page 131, that's our Fund 7. This is our plant fund expenditures. You can see our beginning fund balances, what the revenues that we're expecting to come in, the expenditures that we're thinking to make, and where we should end up next year at June 30. I would also tell you to read this line by line, not as all one report. So the recapitulation by source, A, that's your total funds, local, CO and DS, and PICO funds. The expenditures by project and source, that's just a breakdown of the actual account numbers in Fund 7 and what we're going to spend those monies on. That's an independent report just there for you. And then finally, expenditures by project and type. That's, again, breaking down expenditures that we're making by the GL accounts that we have to report them in. And this is important for state reporting purposes, so you can see how that's going to break down. And after that, 132 through 135 is just the detailed narrative, the technical narrative of the estimations and the numbers that we plugged in to those budgets. And then finally, we prepared for you your estimated fund balances for funds 1 through 9 on 136 and 137.
Questions? Please.
So on that page, Fund 5 Scholarship Fund, I just want to clarify that some scholarships run through the college and others run through the foundation. So these are the scholarships that the college itself is managing as opposed to private donors doing them.
Yes.
Thank you. And then back on page 131, I see that for Building 19 HVAC, you have a $1.2 million line item.
Mm-hmm.
Is that the additional that we are voting on today?
I think so.
Yes.
Yes.
So not the total amount, but 1.8. This is the additional, like, additional 1.2, because we've already approved 600.
Yes.
Correct.
Thank you.
I know there's a lot coming at you, but it's like this every single year, so. Great presentation. The numbers speak for themselves. The narratives are very good. It all comes down to what actually really happens in the next 12 months versus what we think is going to happen. Any further questions on the budget? Anybody want to talk about anything else on the budget? Hearing none.
Excellent presentation.
Excellent.
Yep.
Great. Hearing none. Chair would accept a motion to adopt the budget for the next fiscal year.
I move approval. Second.
Move. Second. Further discussion? Hearing none. All in favor say okie dokie.
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed, like sign. Motion carries. Item number 10 on our agenda is very important, and we don't have time to get into it. It's not a necessity, so I'm going to ask that item 10 be moved to next meeting, which is sometime in September. Anybody have an objection to that? For information purposes, on page 143, you see our normal list of projects. Any questions for Chris on that? Chris, facilities, page 144 to start with.
All right, I got two items. What? That's not a good way to start. What? Building roof, building age roof replacement, looking for project approval, and then I'm looking to increase the budget to go down to completed school HVAC upgrade. Our top deferred maintenance item, Kyle's right, is building, is 26 foot spray and then building 8. It's about 21,000 square feet. It's over 30 years old. It's been recoated twice. We're going to go back up with a modified bituminous roof assembly, the best we can put up there, and just set that building up for decades to come. Got a budget of $1,150,000. We do have available capital reserve and requesting project approval.
How many square feet is that building?
44,000.
Not bad. Pretty good price.
Needs to be done, right?
Absolutely.
Can't find it any cheaper, can you?
Well, it's gonna get shopped out. That's the budget number.
I'm just pulling your strings.
If we approve it, what's the timeline as we're right at the start of hurricane season? When it would get installed?
It would absolutely be after hurricane season.
Okay. So we're the risk is get through the season.
Right.
Okay.
It does have a parapet on it, so we're not quite at risk like we were on our other buildings. So there's a little bit of protection there. I will have to bring the contract back to the board for approval. So.
Okay, what's the board's pleasure?
I move approval.
Second.
Motion made second. Further discussion? Hearing none, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Pose like sign. Chris?
Thank you.
Motion carried.
Okay, Building 19 completed school HVAC upgrade. So the board approved this, I got the date wrong in the board packet. It was June of last year for a budget of $600,000. Trying to pick every little bit of deferred maintenance money we got.
No, I'm just curious. Go ahead.
We thought we'd go in and just change out the air handler boxes. There's six mechanical rooms. We got design completed. After thorough evaluation, the HVAC equipment is 1996 vintage. And we started looking at all the infrastructure in each of the six mechanical rooms, the piping, the valves, the controls, the VFDs, the requirement for bringing in additional outside air, the scope grew exponential. So we did finish design. We did get pricing. It came in at $1.7 million. We were tagged right at the, when we were getting pricing, so was all the other schools for the summer months. We're going to put it back out. We think we'll get more competitive pricing. But I think with a $1.8 million, that's going to be conservative, and I'll have to bring that contract back to the board for approval.
Is that chilled water, or is it?
It is chilled water, yes.
And does it include the cooling tower, too?
No, so the, all those air handlers feed back to our central plant.
Okay, so, and then the upgrades to the controls, are they going to be the software change? Is going to be modified with the newest controls? I don't know what's on.
Yeah, so, we're going to stay with automatic logic in there, and it's just it's updating. They're pushing 30 years old.
Yeah, and all your VFDs are going to be changed out.
No, not all of them. There's certain locations that each of the six mechanical rooms has a different requirement, and there's some VFDs that have to get moved, some have to get replaced. But it's a hybrid of just scope of work we didn't originally anticipate, but.
You don't think you're going to have problems with the old VFDs that you left in?
No, we've had engineering matrix really scrutinize each of the mechanical rooms and the equipment we're proposing. So we're confident on that side.
How many square feet is this building?
That one, I think, for 32,000 square feet. There are 9 air handlers total.
What's a tonnage on?
Yeah, we're pushing about 100 tons. Addressing these six mechanical rooms. Five years ago, six, 7 years ago, we would have been talking 50% less than this.
That's right.
It's insanity, but it is what it is. And
it's not the contractors, it's the suppliers and government regulation.
Stop.
So what do you think cooled the day?
What?
Do we approve?
I think they do a good job kicking the tires, so I would say approve it.
I'll accept that motion.
Second.
$1,800 a ton sounds crazy, but go ahead.
Motion made by the AC guy. So motion is second. Any further discussion or questions? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Pose like sign. Motion carried. You got your money.
Thank you.
Bring us some contracts.
So Kelly's very happy in the back of the room, and our mechanical leads are back here, so thank you.
I live to make them happy.
Okay, so we're not going to get back together until September. President Gregory wanted me to give you an update on where we're at with Parish Phase 1 development. I want to say that it is, I'm very thrilled with how things are proceeding. This is Fort Hammer. Just from a schedule standpoint, from a budget standpoint, from a quality, what Andam's doing out there, their subcontractors. Here's Fort Hammer, that's the center spine. There's going to be a roundabout here, right? The box culvert is installed. That is going to be your primary route for future collegiate school and all the future build out of that property. The lift station's in, all the sanitary sewer manhole structures are in at an average depth of about 20 feet. And that actually last manhole feet back here, so that's all in. Here's your central energy plant. Chilled and hot water lines are on underground. They're feeding the mechanical rooms. They're actually heading this way to stub out for future build out. Trustee that. You can see that the first floor block is up, the tie beams are poured, and we're actually a little bit ahead of schedule.
Back to running.
This is looking to the east. So here's going to be your entrance into the building. This is mechanical electrical storage. This is metering storage area. This is your community room. I'm going to show you some structural right here. Just think about this view. Student services, orientation room, disability resource, your testing center. We've got IT offices here. This is your maintenance shop back here. This is a mechanical room. This is vending area. This whole area here is your student study areas, your tutoring, your library. These are your main bathrooms here. Central energy plant up in this corner. I don't know if you all realize it's two separate buildings. You've got your whole building generator that's going to sit here, the two air-cooled chillers, electrical room here. Your boilers will sit here, and this is hazardous waste and miscellaneous storage there. So it's really coming together. It's a May, end of May timeframe next year that we'd be substantially complete, loading in your furniture, fixtures, and equipment. Just real quickly, this is a front elevation of the central energy plant. This is the entrance elevation, mid-building, that's the south elevation there. This is a mini definition. President Gregory just wanted me to share with you all whether you all are aware or not, but I wear the building code administrator building official hat. So I'm licensed through the state of Florida. Florida statute, state requirements of educational facilities allow state colleges to serve as their own authority having jurisdiction. So what that enables me to do is review your construction documents, your plan review, issue construction permits, and perform all the construction inspections. It's a three-pronged benefit for the college.
Oh, yeah.
Just the timeliness, thoroughness of reviewing the plans, the product we're getting out of our professional development vendors, the timeliness of issuing permits, the timeliness of doing actual inspections. I am on site twice a week. I'm at 55 inspections to date. And the third leg of that stool is the cost savings to the college versus contracting that out to third party. Well, can you imagine us having to work through Manatee County building department?
Horrible.
So here I'm just going to dig, I got a couple more slides, dig a little bit deeper in kind of the things we're looking at when we're out there. So this is your front elevation. These are your hot and chilled water lines that are fed from the central energy plant. Off of this, they're feeding into the mechanical rooms, but this is running all the way to the front of the property across that box culvert and will be stubbed out for the previous school and all future build out. So all that's having to be thought through and inspected. Here's your masonry and your tie beam formwork that's going to get poured. This is looking to the south, your elevator shaft, inspecting the reinforcing steel, the tie beams on all your structural load bearing walls. This is before they pour the slab. It's looking at the vapor barrier and the wire mesh and the electrical stub up, plumbing stub up. All that's got to be inspected and coordinated with the engineers and the subcontractors. To the left here is all your structural steel for your columns. You see that's 12-inch block, not 8-inch block. All your reinforcing steel for your, again, load-bearing walls. And this is walking every inch of that tie beam and looking for reinforcing steel before they poured it. This is the community room, and this is looking out to the west. This is going to be all glass. That's one structural member there. That's a 52-inch cast-in-place beam. You think about that load that's got to be carried because that's all glass underneath it. So it's going to be, that's going to be our money shot right there. And last, this is that box culvert I showed you. You think about the loads, it's got to go across that ditch. It's not just a culvert pipe. You can see the slab. Slab gets poured, the reinforcing steel, the walls, and it ends up getting wing walls, but that's quite the structure for this one. So just some of the gee whiz of that project. Any questions?
No, but I appreciate you taking responsibility, so if anything happens, you know.
Court administrative code cannot be held personally. And you have
Any old business to come before the board? Any new business? Foundation. Mrs. Holmes, if you would.
Well, I thought that I would talk a little bit about our scorecard. All the directors have a scorecard that they see at every single subcommittee and their board meetings. And it's broken out into individual giving, foundations, and of course donor-advised funds, and then our corporations and businesses that support us through sponsorship. So if we look at as of June the 25th, we have our budget or our fundraising achievement goal is $3.2 million. That's without the Dr. Jervy gift, because my board is very cognizant that if they compared that to the previous year, it would be kind of a wonky-looking comparison, and so they want to be really cognizant of where we are towards goal in that $3.2 million of fundraising achievement. So if we look at, as of January the 25th, we're at $2.9 million. That means we have 11% to go, because we have a quarter of a year to our year end is September 30th. So we're not taking our foot off the gas pedal, because we still have about $360,000 to go. So we've been working on lapsed donors, donors that are making their gifts in the summer, and you know, everybody gets busy, and we have procrastination is alive and well, and everyone's having fun for the 4th of July, but we're still making those phone calls because people do still want to support. They just need that kind reminder. And so what I'd like to do here is show you where the donors are designating their gifts so that you can see 39% of them designate towards an academic program. 35% of them are designating towards scholarship, so over 70% of donor gifts come in designated towards a specific thing or passion or their fund. And we've really been working with a new philosophy this year and having donors create funds at State College of Florida Foundation so that we can fill the gap with a $300,000 deficit year over year in scholarships specifically. Then you can see 21% for event campaigns, and then we have athletics at 3%, and then annual campaigns at 2%. And so that would be totaling the $2.9 million. Next slide. Our big next event will be our scholarship luncheon. We are going to have it on a Friday because we know that that's when students are more available. We do have it off property as a courtesy to our students, because if you're a Northport student, it's real difficult to drive all the way up to Bradenton and vice versa for those that are in Northwest Bradenton. So we do have this event at Michael's on East. It is our marquee and most significant fundraiser. We typically do almost a quarter of $1 million gross fundraising achievement for that one event. And it's something our board is very, very proud of, and we hope that you'll make time on your calendar to attend. Lastly, I would like to say thank you to each one of you. As Board of Trustee members, you aren't a part of the fundraising machine and some of the objectives and goals that are given to our directors, but each one of you this year have supported the foundation in a very significant and meaningful way. And we are very, very proud that you have really rose to the occasion and embraced the mission and the goals of what the foundation is doing. And so that's very impressive to the board of directors, and on behalf of them, I would like to thank you, and we're very, very grateful. And then lastly, I learned today that Trustee Infante has a birthday July 4th. So happy birthday.
Oh, you don't. Why are you shaking?
I would prefer not to get older.
not the
It's the anniversary of her 19th birthday.
Yeah. That's right.
20,
and you know, not everybody has a birthday that's going to be the 250th anniversary of our country. And what a great birthday year to have. It really is going to be great. Have a safe and lovely birthday, 4th of July. Yes.
Sorry.
Yes, I didn't know if you had a question.
I do have.
Oh, yes, sir.
You budget into 2027 as well, right?
We are budgeting for the fiscal year 26-27. We are currently budget, our fundraising achievement is going to be a little bit lower than $3.2 million. But I would think that the fact that line has kind of re-upped again, the board would like to revisit that fundraising achievement.
Are you going to be doing naming opportunities in the new building?
Yes. We actually have a list. If that's something that you would like to share in your sphere of influence, or, you know, we are still working towards our goal. We have a little bit like 1.7, 1.8 remaining on our $4 million goal for that capital campaign.
Okay.
And that would be most helpful
to
the foundation. Yes, I can throw that to
you. I can see the Cool Today chiller plant. I think that would be sweet.
Well, I will let you know, Trustee DiDomenico, that we don't name every single aspect because, you know, sometimes it's difficult. So if you know of someone that wants to name hallway or they have just something, you know, we're open to any consideration for someone for naming opportunities. Okay? You're welcome.
Board comments.
Is that my punishment for being late?
Yes.
I understand. Well deserved. I apologize for being late. And I don't have a good reason for it, but it's very embarrassing. Great presentation by all. Appreciate it. If you don't mind, can I put forth, can we have a mission moment at a future meeting on the collegiate school? That's of my passion, I think Jennifer's as well. I'd just love to get an update on that because it is doing so well, and given all the publicity surrounding all the vouchers and charters and everything like that, but we provide a great service. So I'd ask that. I also, and I did I miss a 4th of July announcement or anything? I was curious what the school is doing for the 4th of July or any fundraisers or anything.
We haven't said any announcements out yet.
Okay. Well, personally, I would just like to thank President Gregory and his lovely wife, Erica, for their service in honor of 4th of July as well as all other veteran staff, faculty, teams, students that are veterans. We celebrate you guys this weekend.
Karen?
Once again, congratulations to Dr. Hill and your staff for the accreditation. I know that is a rigorous process, and continue as all of my colleagues, the trustees, and administration to looking at solutions, not only for the difference in how we're funded. I'd be very interested in how details of how we can get more involved, I could get more involved in helping with that process, and I think that it's instrumental as the CFO that the budget is balanced. I'm just like astonished that one, that existed, and two, that you've done such horrendous corrective action. But I think that I can speak for all of us that the goal is to change the salary challenge is and the folks who come and speak is very merited, and as a career educator, I fully understand the dynamics of that, but I remain perplexed at why we are different, but I see signals that we're moving into an arena to be comparable to colleges in the state that are relative size to ours. So I look forward to the future and how we can get more involved in expediting it.
As I've completed my first year academic I just want to thank President Graber and the leader for giving me the opportunity. This has been an extraordinary experience, and I'm so glad I can be a small part in the group. Thank you.
Couple things. First, I just wanted to harken back to something that was said earlier about why, and it goes to politics too, but why public school teachers get so much more funding. Tallahassee is peopled by politicians. Politicians like to get reelected. To get reelected, they need votes. I did a quick look. There's 165,000 public school teachers who vote and their families. There's about 7,000 state college faculty total and their families that vote. So those numbers probably explain a lot of it, and politics is ugly, but that's how it works. You know something about that. I also want to mention the accreditation thing, having been chairman for part of that or all that, I don't really remember for sure, but and having to meet with them and go through this stuff. Oh my gosh. they were not fun to work with. And I'm glad we have new ones. I'm sorry we have to do it again, but okay, that's how that works. And then my last one is a bit of a sad statement. This could possibly be my last meeting. My term is up. I'm not applying for another term. I checked with Susan, and it'll be, in a few months, it'll be 10 years I've been on the board, which I feel like is enough public service. you know, I was thought about, I could draw up a speech about the honor and everything and what it is and all the things have been accomplished while I've been on board. But the truth is that being on the board, I saw as a duty and a responsibility to set a good policy as best as possible as part of the board and to hold accountable those we put in charge of doing that policy. And that, you know, that happened a lot. But I didn't do it. So I can't really take a lot of responsibility for all the success the college has had in my 10 years, and I'm not going to pretend to. But I did get to play a small role, and I got to play a small role in our new president, and I'm happy to do that. And so the reason I wanted to announce it now is because of the funkiness, or maybe better, the vagaries of how the governors appoint people and the speed at which they appoint people. I have committed to stay in this seat until an appointment is found, because we never want to have us have a quorum issue, which we were real close to in times past. And so I'll stay until there's an appointment. So the next meeting is in September. I don't know if I'll be here or not. I might be here for 6 months, too. just don't know. But I wanted to make the announcement now because I've been on the board long enough to see a lot of trustees that just disappear and the other person was in their seat. Because as soon as the government makes an appointment for the seat, that person goes to the next meeting, and I'm out. So I wanted to say it now while everybody was here. I want to say that I also think that in addition to President Gregory, the staff, a lot of whom I've worked with for a number of years, worked with that way overstates it, have been doing their work at the same time I've been on the board for quite a number of years. Really excellent. Some of the new ones, super excellent also. A really strong one. I feel really confident and good about where the board is. I think we have a strong board of trustees. We've had at times in the past, we've had trustees that were kind of just all cheerleaders, and Rago team, and we need a little bit more than that from our trustees. We have a lot of people on here that really do their diligent work in the agenda and trying to understand the school. We have a super confident staff, the right president in place. We do have a strong faculty that, is somehow going to get paid more money someday and well deserves it. So I'm really confident of where the college stands, and I'm not taking very much credit for it, but I feel really confident about being able to go off it after 10 years. And I just appreciate the point of privilege of being able to share that with everybody.
Break the system. That resonated with me a little bit. And very well put way of talking about the challenges we have with faculty-based pay. I think, you know, we need to be even louder without hamstringing the economy politically. So whatever I need to do, I'm available to do. Whether it be putting something on my letterhead or your letterhead and writing to the powers that be to bring more attention to it. Because I think we have to be in business. I got tired of hearing the same thing meeting after meeting and not getting something done. And not that I'm going to get tired of hearing it, but I think we need to be more proactive of doing something about it. First step was balancing our budget. We also got to make sure the state doesn't get comfortable that we are tying to a budget that is below our means, and they're satisfied with that. So we have to keep pushing, and great job to the staff and the team. But, you know, we got the water out of the boat. I don't know how to raise the boat out anymore. So we got to keep pushing on that. So that was a really good presentation, and excellent job on budget.
I just wanted to thank Vice President Price for really helping us business people, non-academia, really understand the finances, because that's a big part of our responsibility as a trustee, the oversight of that. And it was always confusing in the past. And so thank you for that. And lastly, I would just maybe like to ask President Gregory to kind of touch on the political winds that are coming that might benefit us in finding more reoccurring funding, if you think that is the case.
I certainly think it's the case. We're well positioned. Our delegation is very strong politically. Of course, we have our local senator is about to become Senate president. He's already been designated. So after the November election, we'll have the Senate president. And the rest of our delegation is pretty strong as well. And we have good relationships with any of the prospective governor candidates right now. So I think and pray, and I'm very confident that the next 2 years will be very good for our college.
No. A couple things on my behalf. I'm particularly thankful at the end of this fiscal year to say thank you to a wonderful board of governors and trustees who have supported not only me but this college in such a great way. You've been at all the meetings, you've worked hard, and I'm very proud to be the chairman of such a great group of people. Thank you very much for that. As you may, or at least I do quite often, have to speak on behalf of our college or speak in different groups on things. So what I did was make myself a cheat sheet. A fact sheet that President Gregory went over with me, and I thought perhaps you'd like to have a copy of it. You can throw it away if you don't want to. 2 weeks ago, I had to. I gave a little talk to the Chamber of Commerce, Manatee County, and told them that how wonderful we were, and how we would meet the challenge of our communities, et cetera, et cetera. So those are just some things that I read over before I go back on stage. I don't like to prepare speeches, so I just look at it. So anyway, just some facts. Like I say, use it, don't use it, it's up to you. But thank you all very much. And as I do annually, President Gregory, I'd like to ask you a question. To the best of your knowledge, will you assure this District Board of Trustees that for the school year 25-26, the State College of Florida is and has been in compliance with all applicable laws, mandates, ordinances, directives, best standard of practices for education and finance, as handed down by the federal, state, and local governing bodies?
We are.
Thank you. Someday I'll tell you why I do that, but not today, because it's too late. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for a wonderful meeting. Thank you for a great budget.
Thank you.
I appreciate it.